This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Vegetables live in oppression, served on our tables each night. This killing of veggies is madness. I say we take up the fight.
Good day.
Guten Tag.
Dude! Got it for once. Welcome to I Read the News Today, oh boy.
Or IRTN for short.
That's Stephen Benedetti, a permanent resident in Munich, Germany, where American and Canadian liberalism is right-wing politics.
And I'm not sure that's correct, Matt. But anyway, that's Matt Adams. And if you can't tell from the accent or the attitude, he is both a Canadian and an American citizen.
And there we go. And today we're talking about whatever we feel like talking about, because today we are saying goodbye. There it is. Saying goodbye.
There it is. Bye-bye, IRTN.
Bye-bye, IRTN. Who knows? Maybe it'll be like the Eagles. Maybe we'll come back someday.
Matt wants us to be the Eagles. I want a better band. But anyway, before we do any of that stuff, we're still going to do our standard every time banjo playing introduction to news you might have missed.
There we are. So there's been a lot of attention in the U.S. and Canada about the Keystone XL pipeline. This is the one that will take oil from Canada's tar sands and send it to Texas. Much of this concern is around the carbon dioxide emissions, along with issues around land rights, but for today, talking about carbon dioxide emissions. According to an article in The New Scientist by Sarah Jane Keller, CO2 emissions from the pipeline, flowing at a maximum capacity, and this includes extraction, transport, final use, will be around 212 million tons a year. That's a lot. However, as Keller points out, there are plans now to dig and ship coal from Wyoming and Montana to Asia from 3 to 5 marine ports, which could result in an export boom of coal. So the New Scientist did some calculations, and if just 3 of these ports are built, then we're looking at 194 million tons of CO2 a year, and if all 5 are built, then we're looking at 266 million, which is more than the Keystone Pipeline. This is why Keller says coal is the, quote, next climate war, unquote. And you want a prediction? I'll make one in the show later on about what's going to happen with that pipeline.
I just think it's always good to have the next war in the pipeline.
Is our final show going to be the first one that's even remotely funny that we just do? Yep. That's a good line.
As you're undoubtedly aware, Matt, we haven't really done a show since the landslide on a national level of the November elections.
Except for one.
Well, except one, but we were talking about that. Since then, the teeth-gnashing and hand-wringing of the GOP has been a Schadenfreude equivalent of Willy Wonka's never-ending gobstopper. Will the Republicans actually have to stop attacking everyone with different beliefs and truly be more inclusive? That's what most non-GOPers think, but I think the establishment Republicans themselves will be a little harder sell. Just this weekend, Bobby Jindal, the previous non-Caucasian star of the GOP, came out and said that the Republicans do not need to change their positions on things like gay marriage, for example. They just need to do a better job of selling their conservative financial strategies, or fantasies, and then the other stuff will all fall into place. For the sake of the USA, I hope they stick to this idea and become less and less relevant as time goes by.
A nice sentiment, Mr. Benedetti. So, a lot of gun crazy news gets covered, but I have to tell this one. This is from Right Wing Watch, but a little shout out to Daily Coast where I first found it. Here's the deal. On a show called The Solomon Show, Talk to Solomon Show, gun owners of American President Larry Pratt and blogger Greg G. Howard discussed how Obama will be imprisoning hundreds of thousands of people in the coming days and months. And this was not their critique of the horrendous failure in the so-called war on drugs. No, no, this is special crazy land stuff. And you can't write this. You just, you know, this is just too beautiful to be fiction. So I'm just going to quote it. Solomon says, quote, I believe they will put together a racial force to go against an opposite race resistance, basically a black force to go against a white resistance, and then they will claim anyone resisting the black force, they're doing it because they're racist. Howard then agrees. See, it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to actually listen to it and go, huh? Howard says, you may be right. because he has been sowing the seeds of racial hatred that he would be Obama. We were healing quite well as a nation on racial issues until Obama came along, and now we have a lot of racial discord, unquote. Yes, because clearly it is Obama who is sowing the seeds of racial hatred.
Putting aside the racist elements of this, it's one of my favorite things about the Obama presidency overall is like the lack of evidence of something like the FEMA camps or the death panels or the birtherism, the lack of evidence or the gun control issue. He's going to take your guns. The lack of evidence is proof of the conspiracy. It's beautiful.
I know, it's amazing. You're right, because he's never come for our guns. He's going to come for our guns and imprison us and create a black army. And then if you resist that black army, you're racist. I think maybe it goes back to the racist part.
Yeah, there was the racism wasn't a big problem until the black president became president. Strange that he did that. Anyway, okay, back to me. We've discussed many times the different approaches to green energies in Europe or Germany and in the U.S. Well, now it looks like the level of effectiveness and in market penetration of those technologies here has reached some sort of tipping point. Germany is considering removing subsidies to the solar industry because, according to the linked article, the solar energy industry is now competitive with other energy industries. This comes in a rather technical discussion of tariffs, duties, and legal actions being taken against China for attempts at market manipulation or protection. But what gets lost in that discussion is the fact that, contrary to what the U.S. oil oligarchy keeps telling us, it is possible to make solar and, by extension, green energies viable and competitive. Keep on greening.
And speaking of crazy green Fox News, because this is our last show, we can do whatever the heck we want, like we couldn't before. And
is the banjo still going, Matt?
I hope so, yes, yes. Oh. In fact, the banjo will go as long as we feel like it. I'll explain later why I like the banjo. Did you see that thing on Fox like a few weeks ago where they said, well, sure, in Germany there's better solar power because the sun is stronger?
I did see that. That was the most amazing thing. We've got like, I don't know, average like 30% more rain here than in the U.S. or whatever. But, oh my God.
Yes, the German sun. I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, well, you know what? I understand in Fox News that some people would like to see the German sun go for 1,000 years, but that's a different kind of sun.
I was going to, it's not that, Matt. It's just that the Germans have made the sun more efficient. You know, we're good at
Yes, the solar works in Germany. Yes, because of the sun. You know, I kind of struggled with my last news you might have missed. And I thought, oh, should I do this or that or do one on the environment or that? And then I finally said, you know what? I'm just going to pick one because I think it's funny. So there we are. American presidential candidate and diehard libertarian Ron Paul seems to have a little less love for the free market these days and a little less hate for the United Nations. As the website Balloon Juice pointed out, quote, a couple of Ron Paul supporters used their God-given autonomy and the free market to boldly register ronpaul.com a few years ago, unquote. In other words, the domain name was available on the market and they purchased it legally. But Ron Paul wants it. Clearly, then, he can buy it. And the owners are willing to sell it, and the 170,000-person mailing list that goes with it, and they promise to throw in ronpaul.org for free. They want $250,000. Where's the problem? Paul doesn't want to pay. Or he doesn't want to, put another way, he doesn't want to participate in the free market, or even the market at all. He'd rather go to the right-wing house of evil, the United Nations. Paul fired off a complaint to the World Intellectual Property Organization, which is a United Nations organization, to try to get the domains for free. For those keeping score, Ron Paul in 2005 and 2006 introduced and got legislation passed through the House of Representatives that would prevent U.S. taxpayers from having to pay U.N. taxes. To our listeners, I say, and to our listener, I guess supposed to say, at least you are not shocked by this.
You know what? My favorite thing about that, though, is that his followers, or his cult, whatever you want to call them, they'll actually argue that he is against such government control of the marketplace, but as long as it's the law of the land, he'd be a fool not to take advantage of this opportunity. When I say fool, I mean not acting in righteous selfishness. This might actually be logically consistent, but I get lost in the Mobius strip-like logical twists of it all. It's a little confusing. But that's their argument with things like that. Well, yeah, it's wrong, but it's available, so you should take advantage of it.
Yes, well, okay. You know.
What do you do with that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess what you do with that is you say that, so I think the UN's the force of darkness and evil, but I'm happy to use the force of darkness and evil if it saves me a few a few hundred thousand bucks, which is actually not a bad price if he's buying 170,000 person mailing lists. It's not like these guys are trying to take him. Like 250 at large for something like that, I think, is actually below market value.
Oof. Yeah, but you got to consider that those are Ron Paul supporters. I'm pretty sure they count as 3/5 of the human when you get right down to it. Okay.
We'd wow.
Lost our listener. Okay, that was a joke, for the record. And speaking of jokes, who would have thought? But a Seinfeld episode from years and years ago has made a stunning return to the headlines. It turns out that Michigan is losing $10 to $13 million U.S. dollars per year on fraudulent bottle and can returns. Yep, Michigan, the only state giving 10 cents per can instead of either 5 or none, is losing money from dishonest neighbors and have put forward legislation that would make the attempt to return cans and bottles not purchased in Michigan a crime punishable by up to 93 days in jail and a $1,000 fine. While this might seem amusing in some way, this points to a real problem in the U.S. when it comes to states' rights. Whether it is bottle deposits, gay marriage, or gun laws, how can states keep benefits that they like? For example, Michigan has over a 96% recycling rate, while keeping others from leeching off of their system without paying into it. Michigan is at the point of proposing border patrols to be on the lookout for cars or trucks from, say, Indiana, loaded down with illegal bottles. How long before some industrious state legislatures begin proposing border control to check for things like gays, married gays, or guns that don't match state law? Federalism is fun.
And that, my friends, was News You Might Have Missed. And there fades away the banjo to our friend, Pauline.
Pauline knows it's for you. And Matt, and this is interesting. You and I talked about a week ago about wrapping this up for good and not just being on some sort of Eagles-like permanent hiatus or unknown the status, and you told me for the first time ever why there was a banjo in this, and I was unaware of this.
When we first did the show, 2006, 2007 or whatever, and with Keith Gottschalk, so shout out to Keith. We found that we wanted some background music to sort of differentiate the news you might have missed from just the general discussion. And, you know, on most radio shows, they have like some decent music playing in the background, like newsy kind of music. And then I just was kind of attracted to the idea of the banjo because the guys at Car Talk, the NPR show around automobiles, that's one of the biggest shows in NPR, and they're wrapping up, that those guys have managed to make an entertaining show, I think, about cars. And
for how many years have they been doing it? Over
yeah,
20,
like
isn't it?
Time immemorial, and they're actually finishing this year.
Are they? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of the shows are, you know, they're basically the same. But you know, who am I to complain? And and so to me, it was like a little bit of an homage to them, and to
Click and Flack.
Yeah, like a way to try to have a show that's, you know, a little more lighthearted when you're getting some bad news. So yes, maybe you have to pay $900 for that, you know, timing belt, but at least you can laugh about it a little bit. And so it's like,
and those two guys could definitely laugh about it.
I find most of this news actually really depressing. And so on the show, I get to try to find something in it that's perhaps a little less depressing. So it's like my own personal therapy, and then perhaps and make an exposure to people outside in the world from our three or four listeners. And I have to say, we have gotten a few unsolicited letters from people we didn't actually know that said they liked the show, and that meant a lot to us. And
to
so
both
we appreciate
them, absolutely.
That. But so, we've had a very hard time. Steve's an international spy. A lot of people don't know that. But he is.
They do now.
Yeah, sorry. So he travels all over the world, allegedly doing some other work. But he's in, how many countries have you been to, Stephen, in the last 2 years?
Oof, I don't know, 15, 20? I've got no idea.
Yeah,
I try not to count.
And his partner speaks Russian. So So it's very difficult to do a show with an international spy, and then I have my own challenges with my, I have a couple different jobs, and they, so we're just like, you know what, instead of pretending that we're doing shows.
When we are both here, we have a 6-hour time difference, which makes it difficult in terms of a time when both you and I are available to actually sit and talk and do this. And we've just, since November, we've both just found it really hard finding the right time to do this. And instead of letting it hang there, I feel much better with, I get, ridiculous as it sounds, closure, and just like saying, okay,
yep,
now hiatus. And
yep. You know, and that's why I said the Eagles, because they're like, we'll never get back together. And then they did. And I said, well, you were hoping for a better
band. That bad a note.
But you were hoping for a better band. But I was like, really? Because they're pretty cheesy. I mean, come on, Steve, you can spend all your time making love, or you can spend all your love making time. And that's, it's poetic. So poetically justified. Why, like, I was just, I mean, since we're here, we might also talk about the crazy, which is one thing we love to talk about.
Which crazy do you want to talk about first? The Catholic crazy?
Oh, yeah. We could try to touch on that a little bit.
Bad choice of words right there.
So, speaking of which, today, breaking news. UK's most senior Roman Catholic cleric has stepping down amid claims of what they call inappropriate acts or inappropriate behavior.
Very, very clear inappropriate behavior with other adults. This is
right. And this is, of course, part of the challenge with this whole thing is that, like, yeah, like, really, like, that's your problem. Inappropriate behavior with other adults is part of the problem, because of course there shouldn't be inappropriate behavior in the sense of these are consenting adults and do whatever. The other problems, of course, around pedophilia and the cover-up of the pedophilia things are going to continue to be a massive problem, and until they're dealt with through some massive sunshine and some jail time, in my view. And there's all these rumors flying around the post-resignation on that. But I think those are dangerous to sort of, you know, because we don't know. We don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what information. I know you're not Catholic. You're in Canada. I am not Catholic, but I'm living in Munich, which is a very Catholic area. And Benedict was the bishop of the diocese here for many years. So, like, everything that happens with him is big news here. Like, have you been seeing, or are you aware of the fact that he's not going to leave the Vatican?
Yeah, I am aware of that. I think it's interesting. I mean, some people are claiming that there's
going to be immune. He'll have legal immunity if he stays.
That's, yeah, because it's its own country. A lot of people don't realize that. The Vatican's the world's smallest country, I believe.
I don't know. But it's among them. There's a number of city countries: Monaco, San Marino, the Vatican.
Yeah.
There's a few more, but yeah, it's very small.
And it's not like, and he was always, not always, but for many years, decades, he's a very powerful man in the church. He, you know, just, you know, some little backbencher, as we would say here.
He was the head of the Inquisition for many years, and that's, again, not a joke. I don't remember the name, what the Inquisition has become, but whatever they've changed his name to, like, you know, Department of War going to the Department of Defense, the Inquisition changed his name, and he was the head of that for many, many years.
Yeah, very, very powerful man in the infrastructure and bureaucracy, which is, you know, it's a very bureaucratic religious structure there. So, I mean, I think, I know in Canada there's actually a fairly well-known and high-ranking cardinal here that some people thought might have a chance of becoming pope, and who knows. But that cardinal has been putting cold water, as they say, in this notion that there'll be any sort of progressive election. People thought, well, maybe this is a chance. You know, not like ordaining a woman, which would be phenomenal, but, you know, that maybe we get someone a little more progressive. My guess is they might pick
Cruise the birth control or something.
Right. You know, but, you know, maybe it's often geographical, and there's talk about it maybe being from someone from South America. Or some place from Africa.
That's the big rumor up here.
Yeah, where there's growing numbers of Catholics coming in. And maybe they'll pick a conservative who is from one of those regions, and so they can kind of play to different camps. You know, there's a guy going around saying, I should have looked this up, but he's a Catholic scholar and saying, you know, maybe we should go back to the original church structure, which was popeless. That would be interesting. That's not going to happen.
I liked your previous suggestion that it should be Father Guido Sarducci. his time has come.
Yes, not mine. This is before we were on the air. I read about that. I mean, you know, I would love to see like someone with more of the liberation theology movement from Latin America. That'd be phenomenal. A movement and from the Catholic Church or rebels within the Catholic Church, which I have great admiration for. But you know, it's much more
for the like wants to help the poor, for example. Like
yes, you know, talking about yes, you know, the actual material things on you know. Around organizing for like peasants' rights, but who knows? You know, I think we're in a these are conservative times with these institutions, and that'd be my kind of prediction. We're going to get conservative again, don't you think?
And what's it was a news piece that I almost did, but I couldn't find the right hook for it. Was there was a big article in Der Spiegel about the number of churches that are closing in Germany. Physically, the buildings themselves are being shut down. A huge reason is attendance, and it's cutting across all the various Christian denominations. Synagogues are growing, Buddhist temples are growing, mosques are growing, and they're trying to buy some of these churches because hey, you know, it's pretty much set up. But a number of the different flavors of Christianity will not sell their church to another religious group. But like one of the big reasons, like the older ones are closing, some of the biggest reasons is that they're just so architecturally unsound, not in terms of they're falling down, but you can't heat 30-foot high arched ceilings in a building with no insulation. You know, they don't have the money to keep them open in some very real senses. And it's cutting across like all the various Christian denominations here in Germany, and like people freaking out, the religious people are freaking out, and the non-religious people are like, hey, you know, you've had some prime property for a couple hundred years. It's time for somebody else to have that property. It's not a big deal. And it's an interesting progression, I think.
Yeah, and one of the fastest growing Christian denominations is the Pentecost around the world. So which isn't too surprising. I mean, there's sociological studies on that, right? You see the rise of more fundamentalist religions in times of sort of great international uncertainty, and I mean, there's always uncertainty and stuff, but you know, economic crises, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not too surprising. Interesting, though, very interesting about the churches.
Yeah. So,
how about the Church of Oil, the XL pipeline? I said I'd make a prediction.
That's right. Well, so before you do that, at least let's give a little bit of background on it. This is the XL pipeline is the one that's supposed to go from Canada down through America to the Gulf of Mexico, correct?
I believe so. Yeah, it works to the Gulf.
From the tar sands, is that
yep,
also
from
correct?
From the tar sands, which is you know, the oil industry calls them the oil sands, and most other people call them the tar sands because it's really like gooey tar, and it has to be much more processed to become sort of shippable oil. And in Canada, it's extremely controversial because massive amounts of just the project is this huge with massive environmental challenges outside of just the CO2 emissions. And then the CO2 emissions are just phenomenal. You know, we start pumping all this out and selling all this oil in this format, and then it's on land, disputed land with indigenous peoples, and it's going to cross, this pipeline will cross all kinds of, because it goes across the countries, all kinds of areas that are sensitive. And so there's been resistance in the U.S. to parts of it, you know, going by aquifers and stuff.
And of course, the Republicans think it's the best thing that could ever happen. The Democrats as a party are more neutral on it. They're not all that negative, but they're definitely not for it the way the Republicans are. It's been legislation has been proposed a number of times, and Obama's put off coming down on a final decision. And I believe that the final decision still has not yet been made, but there's a deadline for it. Is that correct?
It's imminent. A decision, he's going to make it. I mean, they basically pushed it to after the election. And, you know, he made us talk at the State of the Union about, you know, the need for action on climate change and climate, you know, CO2. And I think he will probably do something in that. But I think, here's my little prediction, he will approve the pipeline with some modifications saying, you know, in this state we're going to do a different route, or in this state we're going to do a different route. We've made compromises. We're ensuring safety, blah, 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 blah. And he'll announce that at the same time that he announces major initiatives to reduce CO2 emissions. And so what it'll say is, in the interest of transitioning and national security, we're going to pull this out. We're going to use this oil, but it's in a package of climate change. I mean, I'd love to be wrong about that, but since I'm not having another show, whatever. But
there's two things that jump out at me about that. First of all, they're going to try to make it safer by not making a direct line and running like in an S form through the country. Yeah, well, double the length of it. It'll be a lot more secure that way. and the second thing is, isn't there something along the lines of, you know, if they began construction on the pipeline today, it's going to be like 10 years before it's like even being used? Any of that oil's like usable for us? Or do you not know anything about that?
Yeah, I should know something about that, but I don't.
I thought there was a huge delay in the time from when they would say they're going to start it to when it actually be anything usable. So, I mean, it's nothing that's going to help. Even if it gets approved tomorrow with none of this other, you know, like we're going to build around aquifers and things, it would still be years before there's any impact from that whatsoever, other than the continued tar
processing.
Processing.
Yeah. And I'm not sure about what their time frame would be, but, you know, it would certainly come at a time where as we approach increasingly amounts of carbon particles in the atmosphere, it would be a devastating blow on that score, which many, many people have said, you know, many climate scientists have said, you know, this is a big one. So, like, you know, pouring gasoline on the fire. So, but I think, I don't know. I'd love to think of another way.
If you
want to
pour gasoline on the fire, you got to get it out of the ground first. So it's, you know.
Yeah, there we go.
There's a lot to it. Yeah. So, Matt, I think we're approaching the end of our little shindig here. Thanks for the couple years of fun with doing this.
Did promise you that we'd talk about baseball.
Yeah, I was going to say, we need to wrap this up on a positive note for me. No, it's just, I love baseball. I even fell more in love with it when I left the country and it wasn't part of the daily life anymore. It's like, it was something I really missed about America, strangely enough. And since I moved here, my hometown team, the Red Sox, won the World Series twice. So that was a great thing for me. And so I've been following pretty intently for a number of years. And this year, your Blue Jays, your beloved Blue Jays, have made some great off-season moves. They look like they could be a powerhouse. And so we're going to do a prediction about, like, we're just going to do the three teams, Yankees, Red Sox, and Blue Jays, and who we think will finish ahead of who is all that we're going to do.
Yeah, since I know even less about baseball than I do about politics, this is tough for me. I'm actually not I'm a big fan of minor league baseball, to tell you the truth. I just like that feeling, but I haven't been to a game in years. There's not a lot of minor ball around here. Well, there's a very, very minor team that's in downtown Toronto, which is kind of cool, like quasi-pro. The Blue Jays. I used to call it the Jays Malaise. Every June would come around and they'd just lie down like a hot dog. You know, just like, don't feel like it. And, you know, I couldn't even look up Nate Silver, who I've leaned on so hard for the show for all these years, because he wasn't making predictions on this, even though it comes from that sort of background of baseball predictions and stuff.
Which makes me very happy. You've got to think of it on your own.
Yep. So that being said, the most talented team in baseball is often not the most winning team, which is an interesting thing. But you kind of have to go on the most talent, and I think on paper, let's go Blue Jays number one.
Really, you're gonna say they're gonna hold up and go the whole way?
Well, they're gonna beat the Yankees in Boston.
Whew. Wow! And then Yankees or Boston? Then who do you got? Yes. Come on, 50-50.
Well, this is the heart of the head, you know. I hate the Yankees, but okay, I'll throw you a bone, Stephen. We'll say Boston takes Yankees. Toronto, yeah. Boston, Yankees.
Dude, man, I actually have the same lineup. That's why I think it's going to finish. I think I've got a good feeling about Toronto. I like the fact that some of the moves they made were absolutely fabulous. They picked up some great players. I'm not remembering who it is at the moment because I didn't.
Dickey.
It's Ray R.A. Dickey. I think he's not going to be as good as people want. Maybe, and even playing in our dome, we'll see how that works. But
he's not going to have Tommy John surgery because he doesn't even have that ligament on his arm. So,
but I'm hoping that the age of the Yankees finally catches up with them, and they Granderson broke his arm yesterday in spring training, and so I'm hoping they finally have that year where it all falls apart, like the Red Sox had last year. Last year was their worst year since the year of my birth. Woohoo! The Red Sox.
So. Yeah, well, let's go Blue Jays. I'll probably go see Dickie pitch. I like those sort of outliers in sports, and I've always been, like, last few years, I've been kind of interested in knuckleballers, and so I was kind of following him before it was cool to follow knuckleballers. Like, there's some, I think the first professional woman player is likely going to be a pitcher and most probably a knuckleballer.
It's a very good bet.
There are women coming up right now that are working on the old knuckleball, and I think it's interesting that, you know, we have a person that's kind of changed it a little bit, and now he throws like a knuckleball at 70, so whatever. Yeah. It's crazy.
Well, so we finish on what I consider to be a positive note, baseball. And the Red Sox ahead of the Yankees.
Well, here in the future, baseball championship Hall of Fame. Yeah. World Series champ, who knows?
Maybe we'll come back in October for a recap of what happened. But
the never-ending reunion tour.
Exactly.
Thank you to our listener. And yes. Thank you, Steven.
Matt, it was a pleasure. I'm glad we get to do this. It was a definite treat for me. I wish you the best of luck in all your future endeavors, and maybe that radio gig you someday want to have will become a reality for you.
Yeah, am available. We'll work for audio. All right. Thank you, Steve.
All right.
Bye-bye. Hey, this is Matt here. And if you've listened this far, and why would you? But here you are. As our final show, here's a tiny little blooper about how we started to begin the show to show you how out of practice we are. Thanks for listening. Dude. No, that's not how we start. I can't remember.
Me neither.
Okay, that's good day. That's right.
Good day. That's it. You said, okay. Still recording.
Still recording. That's
I think we should.
We should finally do the outtakes.
Live in oppression, served on our tables each night. This killing of veggies is madness. I say we take up the fight.